Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We're in verse 286. Esha madhye bhubutsunam, esha madhye bhubutsunam, yadatishte tadapunaha, yadatishte tadapunaha, bodhayasham kriyasarvaha, bodhayasham kriyasarvaha, dushayanschajatu swayam, esha madhye bhubutsunam yada tishtet tada punaha bodhaya esham kriyaha sarvaha dushayan chajatu swayam. This verse is connected to the previous verse. Let me just repeat the previous verse in English and remind you of what it was. They're talking about the person who has knowledge and how that vidvan, the vidvan, should behave in the middle of, when they're in the middle of people who don't have knowledge. So say they're in a group of people who are ajnanis. Then they say that jnani should behave in conformity with the people who, you know, in conformity with the people who don't have knowledge. He says, in terms of their actions, their thinking, their speech, what they do should be in conformity. All of their actions should be in conformity with these people. You know, because, well, he'll go on to say why they don't have knowledge, and not having knowledge as dharmis, take them as in the Vedic culture, they're dharmis, they're following the culture, they're doing their dharma, they're doing the rituals that are enjoined upon them, you know, all so that they can gain punya, gain a better next birth, have a certain amount of shanti in the way that they, and mental shanti in the way, and have a kind of a clean life while living in the world. But all of their entire orientation is around themselves being a limited person within this creation, trying to lead a good dharmic life. And so that's their drishti. They don't have jnanam. They don't recognize that the self that I am is the self in all beings, that the ananda that I'm seeking is my own being. They don't have any such knowledge at all. And so the jnani or the sannyasi may not and does not have the same commitment toward those type of karmas. Even towards karma, toward dharma. Dharma is natural, in fact. The practice of dharma is natural to just being a human being. But the restriction of being dharmic versus adharmic, so that I can gain punya, the restriction of having to do this karma or that karma and this karma so that I'm not accruing papa, you know, that sense of restriction is not there. And that sense of restriction, that sense of having to behave in the world in a certain way so that I can become happy, so that I can gain this and gain that, gain better heaven worlds and a better next life, that type of thinking isn't there for jnani. But then how should that jnani behave when they're in the midst of ajnanis, for whom that is the orientation, that is the reality? Well, you should behave in conformity with them. You know, you should, in conformity means that you shouldn't be rocking the boat. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that in spite of my being Ishwara, you know, in spite of my being Ishwara, I behave in the world to set an example. Right? I behave in the world as people should behave in the world, as a dharmi, you know, as a karmi. You know, to set an example. And he's telling Arjuna, you also have to do that. You also have to behave in the world to set an example. You know, because people view you, what he's saying to Arjuna, people view you as a Shrestha Purusha. Shrestha Purusha, it just says, as an exalted person, an important person in the world. So they look up to you. And so you should be setting an example. I myself set an example. It's not that I take myself to be a doer, an enjoyer, or I'm Bhagavan. No. But still, in the world, I behave in accordance with the dharmas and behavior of a samsari. So setting an example as a dharmanishta means somebody who follows dharma, who does what is to be done. So that's in this verse, he says. Now in this verse, he says in 286, he says, this same person, Eshaha, the person who's the vidvan, this vidvan, who is in the midst of bubutsunam, mumukshus, people who have a desire for self-knowledge. So when he's there, abiding there, amidst some mumukshus, people who have a desire to know, says his tada punha, then again, when he's there amidst the mumukshus, or bubutsunam, people who have a desire for knowledge, then bodhaya esham kriyaha sarvaha, then all of his actions should be for the sake of their gaining knowledge. Bodhaya, for the sake of knowledge, esham of them, for the sake of their knowledge. This part's okay. So, all of their actions should be in support of their gaining knowledge. And so in that context, when that's the context, when they're with people who are mumukshus, people who have desire to know, then he should behave in accordance with knowledge then, for the sake of their knowledge. Then he says, dushayan. Dushayan means dismissing in a sense. Dismissing, censuring all of those karmas, and himself, tyajatu swayam, abandoning them. Right? Because as a sannyasi, actually, you give up all those karmas. You give up all of the rituals. You give up all of the dharmas that you have taken on as a householder. All of those, in fact, are renounced. And all of the karmas were, let me do this so that I can be happy. Let me do this so that I can be happy. Let me behave in the world in such a way so that I become wealthy and powerful, and all of these things that people seek, right? In order to gain self-esteem and to gain self-worth and to gain security, all of those things are given up, you know. And for a jnani, even a jnani who hasn't taken sannyasa, even though you have responsibilities in the world, because you still, if you haven't taken sannyasa, then as a karma yogi, you're living in the world and you're having to make a living and all of these type of things. But in your mind, there's a guna sannyasa, and that guna sannyasa, there's a clear recognition that my ananda is not dependent upon the world. And, number one, my ananda is not dependent on the world, it's my very swarupa, and so my very nature. And so the commitment of my mind is toward the ananda, which is the nature of the self. That's the attachment. That's where the attachment is. The attachment is on the ananda itself, number one. Number two, is the attachment is on the shanti in the mind. The shanti in the mind. And so dharma, adharma, all of these things become natural to a jnani and also important. Dharma is important to a jnani because any type of adharma brings ashanti. And there's no reason for ashanti. There's no reason for the mind to have agitation when the real source of the ananda is the self, and the self is not away from the mind. But there's no distance between the Atma and the mind. The Atma, in fact, is the self of the mind. When the Atma is the ananda, and the only ananda ever reflected or experienced in the mind is that self being reflected in the mind, the only problem that the mind has that causes mental pain is ashanti. Ashanti means different forms of agitation. What is the cause of these forms of agitation? You know, the samsara, the real cause is I need the world to be like this in order for me to be happy. I need this, and it's very subtle. There's all kinds of attachments. Levels and layers and layers and levels of them that I need this to be happy. I need to be treated in this way to be happy. I need... It's so subtle. It goes on and on and on. All of these things are just continually, you know, one continually lets go of those things because every single one of them, every single one of them causes an unnecessary ashanti in the mind, an unnecessary agitation in the mind. That's why we say everything is a sadhana. If the ashanti is there, if the agitation is there, there's your sadhana, right there. It doesn't matter whatever is causing it. Can be interesting to you. It should be interesting to you, in fact. Something is causing some pain, your agitation. Why? What am I asking for? What am I asking for? It's such good manana. You know, now you bring, what am I asking for, really? Is it a little child inside that's asking for something? Is somebody... something afraid? Is your self-esteem being attacked in this way or that way? What are the expectations? What is it that I'm really seeking? What am I really looking for? And so this is manana, right? This is your sadhana, you know, in order to help the mind assimilate, to grow into what your buddhi knows. Buddhi means the buddhi is the one that has jnanam. The manas is lagging behind. The manas is where all the emotions are held, all of the memories, all of these, not just memories, but all of the kind of the emotions, emotional reactions, all of that type of thing is held there. It's all the samskaras and things that are all there ready to kind of respond, to be triggered. And so the buddhi needs to come to play, to handle these type of this lag time. These emotional responses to the creation that are not true to what you know. It's a sadhana. It just becomes interesting. You know, Ishwara comes in, everything comes in, and then you find the mind relaxes in the light of your being able to handle the needs of the mind. You know, on every level, the inner child level, all of this inner work, dealing with our complexes, but also bringing in, that's also knowledge, that's also understanding. And bringing in Ishwara and letting everything kind of resolve. It's like bringing your buddhi back, right, into control. That gives one that nishta. And so the jnani, whether it's a guna sannyasa, means just by your knowledge itself, which is really the true sannyasa, sarvakarma sannyasa, it's the real sannyasa. Where I recognize myself as not a doer. Right? For me, there is no karma. I have sannyasa from all karma because that's the nature of myself. I can't do karma. Atma can't do any karma because Atma is just pure being, pure consciousness. And so it's bringing back always that recognition and recognizing that it is my being that is the source of ananda. It is what I seek. You know? And my being is the self of everything. So just like the Swamiji's graham cracker story, you know, the mother who has the box of graham crackers and one child wants the giraffe and one child, you know, wants the horse and one child wants the elephant, you know. But the adult just wants the graham cracker, right? So the jnani wants the graham cracker. It doesn't have to be an elephant graham cracker or a horse graham cracker or a giraffe graham cracker. It's just the graham cracker. And so... now, when you know that the graham cracker is the Atma, right, and then the Atma is the self of all of these Namarupas, you become feel silly. Feel silly when, you know, once you get yourself back, your buddhi back, and you realize that you're trying to make one set of circumstances, you know, more desirable than another set of circumstances in terms of your being. You know? What I mean by that too is that these are all the wisdom things that come along with your experience. This isn't Swargaloka. You know, this loka is not Swargaloka. not heaven. What that means, it doesn't make any difference what wonderful situation you find yourself in. Right? It has its shadow side. Every single situation, every wonderful situation has its shadow side. You pay for every sukha, there's a nice little dukkha to balance it. Right? And so now here's this wonderful situation. I'm the self of it. This wonderful situation has its sukha dukkha. Now, here's another situation. It has its sukha dukkha. I'm the self of this and the self of this. The self isn't going to change on you. Everything else is. Absolutely everything else is. And so you can experience this and enjoy it as Ishvara, or you can be invested in it behaving in a particular way. If you're invested in it, behaving in a particular way in order to make you happy, that is samsara. If you enjoy it as Ishvara, being invested, having the mind's attachment be toward the stability of your being, that's jnanam. And so the wise person, the vidvan, who's a teacher here in this, you know, who's teaching students, is not going to be putting the same emphasis on karma and dharma and being an upright, a good upright samsari in the world. That emphasis is not going to be there. The emphasis is going to be on the giving up all of that. Giving it up. Because the ananda that you seek is not dependent on it in any way. If it's not, in earlier Vidyaranya said, this is the ananda that you seek is my own being. It has nothing to do with this. It's not dependent. The ananda that you seek is not dependent on this in any way. Therefore, give it up. What does give it up mean? It doesn't mean give it up. Give it up doesn't mean give it up.
What's it mean?
It means don't be attached to it. It means let it be. Why do you have to give it up or not give it up? If you know that the ananda, that's the giving it up. The giving it up is you don't have to give it up, and you don't give it up, don't give it up, doesn't make any difference. It has nothing to do with ananda. So the giving it up is the releasing it from the notion that it can actually make you free, make you full, make you whole. That it can't do. That's what you have to give up. The desire template is this. I want this so that I can be happy. That's the desire temple. That is samsara. Positive version, I want this so that I can be happy. Negative version, I don't want this so that I can be happy. Right? That's the desire template. For the jnani, for the ajnani, you need all three parts. I want this because this is the source of my happiness. What happens for the jnani is you recognize that the fallacy in the template, as though this has something to do with the happiness that I want. You say, I want happiness, and then this thing is stuck in the middle. I want this because this will make me happy. What about when you recognize that this has nothing to do with the happiness? That in fact the source of the happiness is my being. And all that I need is my mind to be half shanti. And I only need that so the mind can be happy. I don't even need that. For my own aparoksha jnanam, for self-evident recognition of myself, I'm the same all the time whether the mind has shanti or not. And so I don't even care if the mind has shanti. He said, the mind doesn't have shanti because it's agitated about this and that. Let it be. Or I can say, you know, this is ridiculous. Why should it be upset? Come home. You're behaving in a deluded way, oh mind. You know? Just come home. Relax. There's no problem here. Relax. Let Bhagavan be. And just appreciate Ishvara as it is now. Take it just as it is. Your ananda is not at stake. And so in this way, this is how the vidvan, the one who has knowledge, will be around those students who have a desire to gain knowledge. And so now it's a totally different orientation. But if you're walking down the street or with your with people who don't have knowledge, you're not, hopefully not going to be talking like this. You know, because it's totally irrelevant and out of place for them. And so now he says about this, he's going to go on a little bit more about why to be follow, why your behavior should follow, be in conformity with the avidvans, the ones who don't have knowledge. So he says, avidvat anusarena, avidvat anusarena, pratira buddhasya yujyate. Vatir-buddhasya-yujyate stanandayanusarena stanandayanusarena varatate-tat-pitayataha varatate-tat-pitayataha avidvad-anusarena vrittihi-buddhasya-yujyate stanandaya-anusarena Vartate tatpitayataha. He says, Vrittihi buddhasya. The behavior, the activity of the wise person, yujate, is proper. The activity of the wise person, which is in conformity with the avidvan. Which takes into account the avidvan, which is in conformity with the one who has ajnanam. That is proper. That is the right way to be. You know, when you're around the avidvans, people who don't have knowledge, to be in kind of compliance with their reality, to act out in that way, that is appropriate behavior. He gives an example. He says, because the father of a child, of an infant, is a stenandaya. Stenandaya is one who is sucking at the breast. It means just a little baby, right? They're still sucking at the breast. That's the name that they have. One who's still sucking at the breast. That's their name for an infant. It's really kind of beautiful. So, just as the father of a little infant would be in conformity, right? Would be in conformity with the little child, right? Then he gives this next verse to explain that. He says like this, because the father of a little child would follow along, you know, would be in conformity with the needs of the little child. So he says, adikshiptas taditova, adikshiptas taditova, balena swapita tada. Balena swapita tada naklishnati nakupyeta naklishnati nakupyeta balam pratyuta lalayet balam pratyuta lalayet adikshiptaha taritaha va balena swapita tada naklishnati nakupyeta balam pratyuta lalayet. He says, the father, Swapita, the father of the child, its father. So swa means its father, the child's father, swa's father. Who is being adikshiptaha, you know, kind of thrown down on the ground, or tadita, you know, hit by the child. It's father that's, the father's, you know, being hit or knocked around or kicked, you know, by the little child. When that happens, he says tada, then when that happens, that father, na klishnanti, doesn't become tormented or hurt or upset by that. Right? Nor does it become very angry at the child, this little infant, you know. How could you kick me like that? So just imagine a little 3-month-old baby. How could you kick me like that? So you won't even think about it. It's not even a possibility. So not only will the father not become upset, he would not become angry at the little child. Rather, Pratyuta, on the other hand, lalayate. The father would fondle the child, would love the child. Right? That type of response, the kicking and the hitting and all of this at a little temper tantrum, you know, will just make the father, you know, comfort the child. You know, it's not going to bring out this other type of anger, you know. In fact, sometimes I tell this story. I was at some friends, this is several years ago actually. I was visiting some friends and they had just had the little child, and gee, he must have been maybe 2 months old. He was just really, really an infant. And so I was over there for dinner and we were eating and whatnot, and he needed to, it's time for him to get ready for bed and have his diapers changed and everything. So I went up with the mother, and we were just sitting in this little room with a little bassinet and bed change, you know, where you change the diapers, and they had a nice little place for that. And this little boy, too, must have been, he was just really a baby. He just did not want his diapers changed. And he was screaming at the top of his lungs, and his little legs were going like this, you know, and his little hands like this, and he was beet red. You know, beet red. He was just beside himself. Yeah. And his mother was saying, "Oh, I know, sweetheart. I know, sweetheart. This will just be a just a..." "No, no, my goodness, you'll be okay. So sweet." I was just thinking, "Oh, this is so precious. This is so precious." And then she got his little diapers changed, and then she picked him up and was patting him. "See, it's okay, it's okay." And he was and slowly, you know, he settled down. It was just the cutest little thing that, you know, I think I was remembering Swamiji doing a verse like this. Probably this very verse. That kind of came to my mind as I was watching. You know, because the intensity of the emotion, the intensity of the extreme anger, extreme rage, extreme frustration, and the mother being nothing but love and understanding with this little infant and doing everything she could just to, you know, to hold him and, you know, getting through this extreme temper tantrum. So there was just love and fondling, that's all. And this is what he's talking about. These type of problems that are so serious, so real for an Ajnani, because the Ananda is out here. And it's not just pretend. It is not true in reality, but it is true for the one that doesn't know. That's why we use the rope snake example. When you see a snake, even though there's no snake there, there's a rope. But that's, you don't see the rope. If you saw the rope, there would be no, you wouldn't have a cognition of the snake. And so your entire reality, your entire emotional response is to the snake. And what if you think it's a cobra? And what if you think the cobra has, that's Swamiji, you'll have it definitely be a cobra. And the fangs will have, you know, the little shreds of the rope will have scratched you and will have bit you. That's what you saw. That's what you experienced. That's your emotional reality. Tenth man's story, it's the same thing. He thinks the tenth man is drowned in the river. He's responsible for that boy. All of the emotions, the whole reality, the horror of it, the nightmare, the fear, all of it is absolutely real, right? Even though it's not real at all. But it's as though completely real. And so this samsara that we experience, or I experience myself as a limited being, subject to birth and death, subject to change, you know, with my ananda being something that I have to achieve and protect. That's my experience, you know. And when a person becomes a mumukshu, it is not that. When they become a mumukshu, they get it, think, "Oh, this is how it is." No, to become a mumukshu means a desire for liberation. Desire for liberation means you know this doesn't work, and you don't know what does. But you know that the creation itself can't give you anything that's stable. You know that for certain. That's what makes you a desire for liberation. You wouldn't have it, this mumukshutvam, if you thought you had the solution. You think you have the solution, you're not a mumukshu. The mumukshu is the one that realizes this creation has no solution to offer by its very nature. And then that person kind of throws up their hand to Bhagavan and says, if you are there, now is the time. Now is the time. I throw up my hands. I ask for you to save me. And that's what Arjuna did in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, if there's no way out, he saw clearly there's no way out of this dilemma. Please teach me. That's the plight of the mumukshu, because from your vantage point of ajnanam, the subject-object relationship, there is no solution to the problem. Right? And so then everything becomes real. Real in the sense that it isn't all right for me to be suffering. It isn't all right for me to be in pain. You know, I need to get out of that somehow. And so how to get out of that? It's very, very... The suffering is very real, and it's very painful. You know, and it can get even more real and more painful if I do catastrophic thinking. You know, to how bad things could become. Mm. And the thing is that in the nature of the creation, things can become really bad. That's why in the whole first part of the Vedas, there's so much emphasis put on dharma and how to be in this creation to have the minimum amount of pain within the duality that we find ourselves in, a duality that's subject to birth and death and continual change. The whole first portion of the Vedas is kind of how to negotiate that reality. The reality of living, if you're living within the world of ajnanam, how to negotiate that. You know, how to not put your hand in fire. That's the first part of the Vedas. But the mumukshu is saying, you know, even if I don't put my hand in fire and I follow dharma carefully, still everything is subject to change. There's still nothing that I can count on. There still is no stability. So is there anything that is stable? Anything that is free by its own nature? That's where the Upanishad comes in. Because in the world there is nothing by its very swarupa, by its very nature. It isn't free. It's not free from change. It's free. It's not subject. It's continually subject to birth and death, continually subject to loss. There is no part of the creation that isn't. And so therefore there's no lasting ananda in anything, ever, at all. And so is there something that by about me that is free of all of this? That's the question that's posed in all of the Upanishads. What's the truth of this? Is there anything? Is there any liberation? Does it exist? What is it? You know? And so you can see here, because of, as the Nabhasha says, the Jnani has, the one who has self-knowledge, has compassion for this plight and for people who are stuck in this ignorance, so that your expectations aren't as though they're going to be somebody, you know, who has complete vairagya toward everything. They can't have complete vairagya toward everything, because my ananda is at stake all of the time. And so, just like you wouldn't expect a little child, you know, to not kick and scream, you're not going to expect, you know, a samsari to not suffer. As long as you were a samsari, you also suffered. And had your reactions, and had your a dharma, where you chose your own pleasure over sometimes what was right. That's what everybody does. That you do it, you try not to, but you know, yeah, everybody makes those mistakes. That's how it is, because it's your well-being, your ananda, that's always put at stake. And so just like a father will just care about the child and try to protect and help, the teacher, the jnani, will care about the student or the people and try to help, not hold against them all of these, you know, not all of the pain and suffering and the anger that they all undergo, and you also underwent. So, you know, so it goes on. Nindita stuyamano va Ninditastu yamano va vidvana jnana nindati vidvana jnana nindati nastauti kintute sham syat nastauti kintute sham syat yatha buddhas tatha chare yatha buddhas tatha chare Ninditaha stuyamanaha va vidvan agnyaihi nanindati nastauti kintu tesham syat yatha buddhaha tatha acharet. He says, a vidvan, a person who has knowledge, who is being censured or criticized or praised, a vidvan being censured or praised by an agnani, you know, that vidvan doesn't censure or praise. Say the agnanis are censuring, criticizing the vidvan, or they're praising the vidvan. So all the agnanis are censuring or praising. The vidvan, in response to that, doesn't censure or praise. Rather, he says, but rather, what does he do? So the idea is this: say an avidvan, an avdani, is criticizing you. Then you think, what does the vidvan do? Well, he criticizes back. No, he doesn't criticize back. Say the avidvan is praising you. Then you praise back. Oh, you're such a great person. Oh, you're such a great person. You're such a schmuck. What? You know, you're a schmuck too. So, this type of tit for tat, the vidvan doesn't do. What does he do instead? What should he do instead? He says, for the agnani, what is needed for their knowledge? That he should do. Whatever the person needs for knowledge, for their knowledge, that's how they should behave. Not in any other way. That's how they behave. It's like saying, Swamiji said it in this way, which I like. It's what can I do to help? How can I be helpful? What can I do to help? You know? So what brings things to an even keel? What clears out the... the mess, or what clears out the delusion, or what clears out the reaction? What can I do to help? That's the natural response of the jnani, not the tit for tat. Okay? So now he says, continuing with this, yenayam natane natra bhujyate karyam eva tat bhujyate karyam eva tat agnya prabodat naivanyat agnyat prabodat naivanyat karyam maschetra tadvidaha karyam maschetra tadvidaha yena ayam natanena atra bhujyate karyam evatat agnyat prabodat na eva anyat karyam asti atra tadvidaha. He goes, by which, yena means by which, yena natanena. Natana actually means like acting or action. You can take it as action here. By whatever action, ayam, this person, atra, here, in this world where we find ourselves, by whatever behavior, by whatever action, by whatever is to be done, it is ayam bhujyate. For that person to know, this agnani, to know, but bhujyate here is in fourth atmanapada, and it just is present tense. We're used to bodhate, but bhujyate is also present tense. So ayam bhujyate. This person knows that this agnani knows, karyam eva tat, that alone should be done. What should be done? whatever it takes to help this person know, that's what is to be done. Karya means is to be done. Agnya prabodat na eva anyat karyam asti atra tadvidaha. He says, there is nothing else to do. There is no other thing to do. And there is nothing else to be done other than giving knowledge to the one who is ignorant. Anyat prabodat anyat. Other than giving knowledge, that anyat covers the fifth case. Other than giving knowledge for Bodha to the Ajna, right? Other than giving knowledge to the one who doesn't have knowledge, there is nothing else here in this world for the one who has knowledge to do. That's it. Because that's the only thing that's helpful. If you're not going to do that, then when you're in the context with the people who have Ajnani, then you just behave in conformity with them. If there's anything for you to do that needs to be done in terms of yourself as a jnani, what is it? They give knowledge to the ones who don't have knowledge. But the ones who don't have knowledge, to give knowledge to them, whatever it takes for them to want this knowledge, then you do that. If they don't want that the knowledge, then what do?
Stay quiet.
You stay quiet. Yeah. You be in conformity with those people. But if there's anything for you to do, what would that be? Then he says, well, there really isn't anything for you to do other than give knowledge to the person who doesn't know. Yeah? Now, he's talking really in terms of sannyasa. When a person takes sannyasa, that is what they do. They study and teach. That's the dharma. You study and teach. Study, live the contemplative life, and teach. Who do you teach? The people who come to you to be taught. Vidyaranya and others have used this example. Say the person's not inclined to teach. You don't have to be inclined to teach. Maybe that's not in your karma to be a teacher. However, when somebody comes to you and says, could you please teach me? Then you'll teach them. Because somebody's come to you and said, could you teach me this? Could you please explain this to me? And you'll say, well, I'm not really a teacher. That's not really... well, I'm a teacher, but I'll do the best I can. Because that's what's human. That's just what you would do. I'm not really a teacher, I'll do the best I can. Or you like to teach and you'll say, oh yeah, sit down, let me teach you, no problem. Right? So that's what is to be done by you for those people who come to you to have that done. And that's what's natural. You don't even think about it. Right? That's just the way that life is. That's what he's saying. It's just, this is naturally how it is. He's winding up in this chapter. So, kriti kriti yat trittaha, prapta prapta yat punaha, tripyan naivam swamanasa. Tripyan naivam swamanasa, manyate sau nirantaram. Now he's summarizing everything. He's beginning the whole summation. He says, krita kritya tiya triptaha, prapya prapya tiya punaha. Tripyan evam swamanasa manyate asa nirantaram. It says this person, asau, this jnani is who is triptaha, this person who is triptaha satisfied. Why? Kriti kriti tiya. Because of being one who has done what has to be done. Kriti kriti tiya. This person is tripta, satisfied, complete, whole. Because of having done what is to be done, and prapta prapta tiya punaha, and again, having achieved what is to be achieved. So this person having now feels, I've done what has to be done, I've achieved what is to be achieved. But this person continually nirantaram, feeling satisfied tripped in this manner, tripyaneva, feeling satisfied in this manner, I've done what is to be done, I've achieved what is to be achieved. This person, he thinks, manyate, in his own mind, he thinks in himself, in his own mind. He goes on endlessly, without pause, all the time. He's thinking in his own mind, what? Danyoham, danyoham. So you have to repeat this at once. Danyoham, danyoham. Danyoham, danyoham. Nityam swatmanam anjasa vedme. You have to chant it with me. Okay, let me try to chant it. Danyoham, danyoham, nityam. Danyoham, danyoham, nityam. Swatmanam anjasa vedme. Swatmanam anjasa vedme. Danyoham, danyoham, brahma. Danyoham, danyoham, brahma. Ānanda vibhāti me spashtam. Ānanda vibhāti me spashtam. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham, nityam, swatmanam anjasa vedme. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham, brahma ānandaha vibhāti me spashtam. He goes thinking in his mind all of the time, I am blessed. I am blessed. I am blessed because I know Vedni, Anjasa. I know directly Aparoksha. Anjasa's Aparoksha. I know directly Swat. I know immediately. I see so clearly Swatmanam, my own self, which is Nityam, free from time. I see so clearly Aparoksha. I see. I am blessed. I am blessed. The ananda of Brahman, the fullness of Brahman, shines, vibhati, is manifest, spashtam clearly for me. Means my mind enjoys that shanti, and so the ananda, the limitlessness of Brahman, is replete, it's shining so clearly for me. Then he says, danyoham, danyoham, dukkham. Danyoham, danyoham, dukkham. Samsarikam na vekshedya. Samsarikam na vekshedya. Danyoham, danyoham, swasya. Danyoham, danyoham, swasya. Ajnanam palayitam kwapi. Ajnanam palayitam kwapi. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham, dukkham. Samsarikam na vikshe adya. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham, swasya, ajnanam palayitam kwa api. I am blessed, I am blessed. I no longer see this sorrow of samsara, the samsarika dukkha, the sorrow which is born of samsara. Adya means now, I don't see that now. I don't experience that now, that dukkha that is born of samsara. I need this to be happy. I'm not getting it, dukkha. So, I no longer see that. I am blessed. I am blessed. Swasya ajnanam, my ajnanam, palayitam kwapi. It has run off somewhere. Palayitam means it's fled. It's escaped. It's run off. It's run off somewhere. Kwapi means somewhere. It's gone away. It's run away somewhere. This my ajnanam, it's gone. Danyoham, danyoham kartavyam. Danyoham, danyoham kartavyam. Mena vidyate kinchit. Mena vidyate kinchit. Danyoham, danyoham praptavyam. Danyoham, danyoham praptavyam. Sarvamadya sampannam. Sarvamadya sampannam. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham kartavyam. Mena vidyate kinchit. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham praptavyam. Sarvam adya sampannam. I am blessed, I am blessed. kartavyam me na vidyate kinchit. There is nothing to be done by me. There is nothing to be done by me for me to do now. I am blessed, I am blessed. Praptavyam sarvam adya sampannam. All that is to be attained. Praptavyam means to be attained. Sarvam praptavyam. Everything that is to be attained. Adya, now, sampannam, is attained. Everything to be gained, that's now gained. There's nothing left for me to do. There's no more for me to do. Danyoham, danyoham, triptehe. Danyoham, danyoham, triptehe. Me ko pama bhaveloke. Me ko pama bhaveloke. Danyoham, danyoham, danyaha. Danyoham, danyoham, danyaha. Danyaf punaf punar danyaha. Danyaf punaf punar danyaha. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham. Triptehe me ka upama bhavet loke. Danyaha aham, danyaha aham. Danyaha, danyaha. Punaha, punaha, danyaha. I am blessed, I am blessed. Ka upama. There is no comparison for the satisfaction which I have. Ka upama. Bhavet loke. In this world, there is nothing comparable to the satisfaction which I have. Upama is something that can be compared to something else. So ka upama, he says, ka upama, what is comparable to the tripti, the satisfaction that I have in this world? What is the upama? What could be a comparison for this tripti, this satisfaction of mine in this world? I am blessed, danyaha, danyaha, I am blessed, I am blessed. Blessed, blessed, again and again, blessed. It says, danyoham, danyoham, I am blessed, I am blessed. Danyaha, danyaha, blessed, blessed. Punaha, punaha, again and again, danyaha, blessed. Aho punyam, aho punyam. Aho punyam, aho punyam, palitam, palitam, dridam, palitam, palitam, dridam, asya punyasya sampattehe, asya punyasya sampattehe, aho vayam, aho vayam, aho vayam, aho vayam, aho punyam, palitam, palitam, dridam, asya punyasya sampattehe, ahovayam, ahovayam. Aho means, oh, what a wonder. Oh, how wonderful, what a wonder, oh, what a wonder. Aho punyam, what a wonder this punya. Aho punyam, oh, what a wonder this punya. Palitam, palitam, dritam, it is fructified. Palitam means fructified. It is fructified, dridam, with such firmness. It is fructified so strongly. Asya punyasya sampattehe. Because of the sampati, the attainment of this punya, anyas asya punyasya, of this punya sampattehe, because of the gain of this punya, vayam ahaha, vayam ahaha, aho vayam, aho vayam. What a wonder are we, what a wonder are we. We are so blessed because of this punya. What a wonder for us to even be. Aho vayam, vayam means we. So aho vayam, aho vayam. Aho shastram, aho shastram. Aho shastram, aho shastram. Aho gurur, aho guruhu. Aho gurur, aho guruhu. Aho jnanam, aho jnanam. Aho jnanam, aho jnanam, aho sikkam, aho sikkam. Maho sukham, maho sukham. What a wonder this knowledge. What a wonder this knowledge. Aho jnanam, aho jnanam. What a wonder this knowledge. What a wonder this jnanam. What a wonder the guru, the teacher. What a wonder the teacher. This jnanam, guru. So then, aho shastram, aho shastram. What a wonder this teaching, the shastra, the Upanishad. What a wonder the shastra. What a wonder the shastra. What a wonder the guru. If it was a shastra, the guru, what a wonder the teacher, what a wonder the teacher. What a wonder that jnanam, that the shastra, that the acharya, the shastra, what a wonder they are. What a wonder the knowledge that there's such a thing. What a wonder this knowledge. And then, what a wonder the ananda, the pala of this knowledge. So, aho sukham, aho sukham. So now it's just praising the whole sampradaya. And that knowledge even exists. What a wonder. Then he says, Tripti deepam imam nityam, yenusandatate buddhaha, pramanande nimajjantaha, pramanande nimajjantaha, te tripyanti nirantaram, te tripyanti nirantaram. Says, Tripti deepam imam nityam, Ye anusan didate buddhaha brahma anande nimajjantaha te tripyante nirantaram. Ye buddhaha, those people, wise people, who anusan didate, who investigate, reflect upon, think about, you know, contemplate upon, this Tripti Deepam, name of this chapter, this light of satisfaction. The name of the chapter that we've done is Tripti Deepam, the light of satisfaction. So those buddhaha, those people who have knowledge, who contemplate on, you know, who contemplate on, who always nityam, who always contemplate on, you know, always are studying and thinking about this Tripti Deepam, this light of satisfaction. Brahmanande nibajantaha te, they who are absorbed in, immersed in, the ananda, they being immersed in the ananda of Brahman, Brahmanande nibajantaha, and nibaj also means to drown. So they're drowning in, they're totally immersed in, absorbed in that ananda which is Brahman. Those people, they tripyanti, they are tripyanti nirantaram. They are satisfied without any break. Nirantaram means there's nothing in between. So they enjoy that continual satisfaction, being absorbed or immersed totally in the ananda of Brahman. Those buddhaha, those wise people who always contemplate on this light of satisfaction called Tripti Deepam. So that's the text. Let's go back to verse 1 and chant it. That's traditionally what we do. Remember, this Tripti Deepam is the whole, almost 300 verses is all only an exposition of this one verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So let's chant that in honor of this. Atmanam cheti janiyat, Atmanam cheti janiyat, Ayamasniti purushaha, Ayamasniti purushaha, Kimichan kasya kamaya, Kimichan kasya kamaya, Shariram anusanjwaret, Shariram anusanjwaret. He says, if a person should know the self as I am this, right? If a person should know the Atma, the Satchitatma, as Ayamasmi, I am this, that's Aparoksha Jnanam. So if a person should have direct, immediate Aparoksha Jnanam of the nature of the self, of the Atma, then Kimichan, desiring what? And for who? Desiring what? And for whose sake, right? kya nichan kasya kamaya, shariram anusanjure. Does one get feverish over the body, the physical body, the stula sharira, the sukshma sharira, the karana sharira, the physical body, the mind and the emotions, all of the ajnanam, all of these things? Why would a person get so worked up into a tizzy over these things? It's rhetorical. They wouldn't. If a person were to, should know, but if a person knows the nature of the self as ayamasmi, I am this, right? Then desiring what? And for whose sake does a person get, what a person would they get so, would they get fever, get into a fever over the different dukkhas, sorrows? Remember, there's a big section on this, the different sorrows or problems that the body, the mind, sense organs, etc. go through. And that's from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So this was Tripitaka by Vidyaranya, a chapter totally devoted to that one verse. And so, let's just take a moment. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Repeats that danyoham, danyoham.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah.
Just that. Yeah. Let themselves go.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
How do you know the meter of that?
There's just different meters. I just figure out one that works. You know, there's different meters. Swamiji, in his, over the years, there's four or five different ones that he'll use. You just find one that fits.
But would that verse have fit the understood meter? That
it didn't fit
it
the
didn't,
ones that...
Right, so it doesn't
no.
fit, so that's why you have to have another...
That's why you have to have right. another one. So I tried different ones before class to see if I could find something. And that would work.
You know, saying that I am blessed and I am blessed,
mm-hmm.
It's more than just a praise. I mean, it's also a truth, because you can be blessed and not know that you're blessed.
Right, no, it's that feeling of inner wholeness that all is well with me. There's nothing more for me to do. I've gained what is to be gained, and now I can appreciate the creation as Ishwar as long as my prarabdha is here. I can live it out. You know, but I know what's going on. There's meaning. It's purposeful. And I'm not in pain, you know. If my mind's in pain, then I know how to be with it. Just like a person's in pain, you know how to help them. If your mind is in pain or your body is in pain, then you do, you know, what needs to be done to take care of it. But yourself, the Atma, you are not in pain. Your being is not in pain. You're always the same. And that gives you a little space, you know, to take care of the world, which your body, mind, sense organs are included in. It's not the world isn't just out here. This body, this mind, these sense organs, all these samskaras, all of the unconscious, everything that belongs to this jiva is part of Ishvara also and needs attention, whatever attention it needs, just like the world needs whatever attention it needs. This upadi isn't different than that in terms of taking care of it, you know, and all of the different little parts inside. It have different little demands. Yeah.
Other question. If I acknowledge there's action at all, wouldn't I always be the actor since I'm Ishvara?
If you acknowledge that the action that you acknowledge is mitya.
That's what I meant with if I say there's action at all.
Yeah. It's Ishvara. And it's mitya.
Okay.
Even any ahankara that you have is mitya.
Mm-hmm.
Any kartritvam doership is mitya. And that, in fact, understanding it as mitya allows it to be there without you having to worry about it.
Right.
You know? If you don't understand the mitya, the satya mitya, then you can't let the creation be. That's the one problem in yoga, in Sankhya. Not the yoga. Yoga, when I say yoga, I have to be careful because the yoga which is associated with the Sankhya tradition, so let me just say Sankhya, where the Prakriti is real. It's not mitya. It's real. And so the type of separation you need from that Prakriti is much different because you're dealing with something real. Nitya is not real. In this sense, nitya, let me say it like this. The truth of nitya is satyam, is your being. You know? And so just like the truth of an imagination is your being, the truth of a dream is your being. What is actually there is yourself, and it's not being harmed at all in any way. You know? And so, and also, as the very truth of all of your experience, without exception, there's no exception. It's not like, I'm only there for my good experience, not my bad experience. All experience has the strength and stability and fullness of my being as itself, like the clay pot. You know, and so there is no distance between myself and mitya. And that means that there's no distance between... I am the stability. And there's nothing can... And that's aproksha. Aproksha means that's self-evident to me. You know? But just like we like to have a healthy body, and if you can have a healthy body by taking care of it and eating properly, you know, in this body, you'll be relieved of the suffering of this body. To some degree, right?
Well, when that suffering's there, can you see the difference? When the suffering's there?
Yes, there's a huge difference, because for the jnani, if the suffering is there, the suffering, so is the aparoksha atma. Mm-hmm. The self that's not suffering is holding the one that is suffering. It's the very truth of the one that is suffering, and that's self-evident to you. For a jnani, that differentiation isn't made, isn't known, isn't recognized. And so the whole focus is only on the suffering. There's no self there that is free of the suffering. And that's a huge difference. You know? But just we'd like a healthy body, and you can, if you have a little wisdom about how to treat your body, you know, it can enjoy as good a health as your karma allows, and you know, it's still gonna grow old and die, but still you can keep it well. And it is the same, you know, with your mind, by having that kaushalam, karma yoga buddhi, kaushalam, knowing how dharma, knowing how to be in the world, knowing how to handle your unconscious, all of these things, those are skills that, on a relative level, give the mind a lot of health and peace. And then, then once the fundamental problem is solved with knowledge, then the mind's fundamental problem of seeking to become happy is resolved. Yeah. And then if you've learned how to take care of the topical problems of the mind and take care of it psychologically and the things that it needs so that it can mature and get over the traumas of childhood and all these things, you know, then you're bringing that mind up in a healthy way. You're treating that mind in a way where whatever hurts and pains that you got along the way, like in the 10th man story, sometimes Swamiji has the poor 10th man, he's so distraught that he bangs his head on a tree and gets a big cut and it's all bruised up and everything. So then he has to tend that, you know, to heal it, you know, put some salve on it and band-aid and stuff.
Oh, that's us.
So we have a lot of, you know, bruises. You come to knowledge bruised up, or your psyche's all bruised this way or that way. It needs to be, you need help to heal it. But that's also, that's what we call kaushalam. It's a skill. You learn how to take care of it properly. And then in the light of that, with your knowledge, the hurts and pains of the mind, you know, the topical hurts and pains and complexes of the mind, work themselves out so that the mind enjoys a more natural shanti, so that the mind itself enjoys the phala, the fruit of this knowledge, because it no longer has to do anything to become happy. It doesn't have to go out here and get this and get that. It doesn't have to do that anymore. And so if you take care of, you know, tend it properly and heal all these wounds, which all the childhood wounds and things, then it's able to really enjoy the, itself can enjoy tremendously the fruit of this knowledge. But even without the, as even when the mind is healing itself and not completely healed and has different complexes and whatnot that still cause reactions and pain, still for the one who has knowledge, yourself, your very being itself is ananda. You know, not the different types of bliss experiences in the mind. It's the stable fullness of being itself, which is ever present to the mind. And that stable presence of my being itself is very healing to the mind, because the mind, with all its hurts and pains, is having its hurts and pains in my presence, right? In the presence of that which is completely benign, non-judgmental. The self is benign, it's non-judgmental, it's full, it's complete. And so the mind now is not alone in its experience of pain, because I'm there. The Atma is there, you know. And then on another level, we have the buddhi, which knows how to talk, to be a friend, right? The self of the buddhi is the Atma. The buddhi knows how to come into dialogue with the mind, of different child parts of the mind, to be helpful, to be kind. Just like to your friends and your clients and your children and your family, the people in your world, you can be helpful, you can be kind, you can use words to be helpful, to be kind, you can use your feelings, your empathy to be helpful, to be kind, to help. In the same way, you can be helpful, you can be kind to your mind, to the parts of the mind that are hurting. So you have to include this upadhi in this, as you would treat others. We usually say, you know, as you treat yourself, so you should treat others. I'm saying, as you treat others, you should treat yourself, your mind. As you're kind to others, as you want to help others, you need to help the parts of your mind that are hurting or need, you know, in pain. It makes a huge difference.
It seems like you really have to be alert to what you know about yourself, and to bring that to the mind.
That's true. That's true as long as there are complexes in the mind that are causing pain. Mm-hmm. You know, then that pain overwhelms the mind, right? That becomes your experience, right? If there's a complex in a reaction in the mind, that reaction is your experience. It's an emotion. It's your experience. So now, how are you? How are you with that experience? Right? That matters. Does the experience dictate how you are, or do you meet the experience from the standpoint of knowledge, from the standpoint of care? That's where it matters. Because otherwise what happens, what we're kind of used to happening until we have knowledge, is the emotion comes, the reaction comes, and then the way I respond is out of the emotion. So say there's emotion of hurt comes. Something happens and I feel very hurt. Then how do I talk to myself? As a hurt person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I talk out of the hurt. Say I'm angry. Then how do I talk? Out of the anger. Now I'm an angry person. I'm talking as an angry person. Whereas here, if the hurt comes, then the buddhi that has knowledge can be with that hurt. Not out of the hurt. Not speaking out of the hurt, but speaking to the hurt. Like, I know you're hurt. Tell me what it is. Tell me all about it. No? Work comes into relationship with it. Or you're very angry. I know you're angry. You're so angry. Let me hear about it. See? Comes into relationship with it. And then you hear about it and let the whole hurt or anger express itself. You know? And then you can, after it's said everything, just like in therapy, it's the same. You know, then you can possibly make some suggestions and then slowly just bring it back to your knowledge. You know? But what we're used to doing until we have knowledge or even have some psychological maturity, you can get a lot of this. Not you won't come from the standpoint of the Atma, but you can learn how to hold the reaction rather than be the reaction. And that's what you need to learn how to do. Otherwise, you're just drowning and speaking out of the reaction. And there's nobody else inside. It's a very important skill to learn in terms of having really mental shanti, having peace. If you don't know how to do that, then you're just being tossed around by the mind. Whatever the mind is feeling, whatever the mind is doing, that's what's there, you know, tossing you around.
Well, with this knowledge, can you expect the mind to magically just heal itself? Or, I mean, you need to bring the skill to it, then, is what
you need
saying.
To bring the skill to it, but this skill that I'm talking about is part of understanding. It's part of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just like karma yoga. Karma yoga is not away from knowledge. The whole karma yoga buddhi, that is knowledge in application, right? To your how to be in this world as your knowledge, as you're gaining nishtha. You know, as that when that you start gaining knowledge, you still have doership, because it's not like the teacher teaches you and boom, everything's taken care of. You know, there's assimilation that takes place. So, you know, by the maturing of vairagya and all of these things. So what attitude? What are the attitudes with which to handle my own mind and handle my relationship with the world? How do I handle my desires? All of that. You have to know that in order to provide an inner environment for your mind to gain nishtha. Like what if otherwise, what if you're just criticizing your mind all the time and not understanding that process of maturing.
When you say when you first gain knowledge, you still have doership. So then my understanding
it means what I meant was when,
yeah.
As you are start listening, right?
Yeah.
You're starting your shravana.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're becoming clear and becoming clear, but you don't become clear just like that. And so there's a time, you know. And so this karma yoga buddhi is perfect for, because it provides the environment for where with the karma yoga buddhi, your mind is as though has knowledge, right? And then in that environment and that shanti that karma yoga buddhi brings about, this knowledge then is, the mind is in a proper condition for this knowledge to become, to take root, and for that ahankara to become dilated, you know, to slowly disappears. The ahankara stays as nitya.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have any ahankara strength.
Well, that's that word sublated.
Sublated. Body to.
Burnt seed,
right? Dagda bija. Bija means seed. Dagda burnt. Another word that we said, dagda bija, it becomes like a burnt seed. It can't sprout into anything. Another word we say is bodhita. It's bodhita. Bodhita means it's sublated. You know, it doesn't, knowledge is so much stronger than it doesn't have the capacity.
Does bodhita also mean as though?
No.
Oh.
Bodhita means either sublated or can also mean hurt.
What is
you're thinking Eva. No, Eva means no. As though.
No, I thought bodhita meant as though. I was wrong. Mm-mm.
Thinking what you might be thinking of.
I think I was just wrong.
What's next, Carol?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking of Kaivalya Upanishad. It's a short Upanishad, very beautiful. A lot of some beautiful verses, a lot of vision verses. It's got 23 verses.
Something to fill in the gap before you go.
It won't fill in the gap. I won't finish it. But it's a short Upanishad. We won't be with it forever. Like, it won't be
for 2 years.
2 years.
2013.
Oh, so much vision. It's all vision. It's really, it's beautiful Upanishad.
Are you gonna start that before you go to India? I mean, we have how many? We have a bunch of Sundays left.
Yeah. I'll start something.
Well, let's do that. That sounds
like a beautiful Upanishad. You know what? When we had a course, the first course in, where was it? In Piercy? Remember on the, in, up in Garberville, we had a 3-year course back in 1982. And that's the text Swamiji's taught, had me teach.
Oh,
I thought you did Aparoksha.
I did that too. I did Aparoksha Anubhuti. I did Sutdarshana. But I did Kaivalya Upanishad. That was a long time ago. I don't know if I've taught it. I don't think I've taught it since. Mm-hmm. I haven't taught it since 1982.
About time.
About time. And that text, Shankara didn't write a bhasha on for some reason.
Huh. But Shankara didn't?
Maybe because he thought it was evident, the meaning. I mean, didn't he usually write bhashas to explain sort of what was maybe obscure or not understood? Or
yeah, but I don't know what the reason. I mean, we can speculate. I'd have to ask Swamiji. I don't know if Swamiji knows the reason either. But those who there are more than just the 12 Upanishads, right, that Shankara wrote bhashas on. But this Kaivalya is often taught. Mm-hmm. You know, we teach those 12 Upanishads in the Kaivalya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a particular bhasha that you use on that?
I have one. I'll make a copy for us. I have that book. It's got about, well, I don't know, 50 new Upanishads with bhashas.
So who wrote the bhashas on that one?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to look and see. The one that we usually use. I forget who it is.
Is it considered authoritative? Is it considered authoritative?
Swamiji uses it.
Huh?
It's good enough for me. I'll have to see if I can find a translation of it, too. I'll call John and see if we've got one.
Translation of the bhasha?
Kaivalya, no, the Upanishad. Yes, you have a book. I find a book. Mm. And I'll make a copy of the Sanskrit thing I use.
So it's called the Kaivalya?
Kaivalya Upanishad.
Oh, so that's not in there.
Do you have that book that's got 12 or 13 Upanishads with bhashas in it? A lot of us got that.
I have the Swami Kaivalya Upanishad. grid. G, let's start with G. Kind of the one, it's the 10.